We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
From Illinois Public Media, this is Focus on AM 580 and online at will.illinois.edu. Good morning. I'm Celeste Quinn. Do you remember the days of the grand downtown family-run department store? Today, we serve ourselves at big box or discount stores. We head to malls. And now, we can shop over the internet, never speaking to anyone as we place an order. It's convenient, but impersonal. Today on Focus, we remember Robeson's department store. It served Champaign-Urbana and downstate Illinois for generations with fine goods and services until closing in 1990. Robeson's story goes back to 1874 when Frank Kern, F.K. Robeson, opened a dry goods store. His son and grandson continued to build on that foundation. The store was a landmark, and the name Robeson remains well-known, not only by those who remember the store, but in the community today, thanks to efforts including Robeson School, Robeson Park, and the Robeson Pavilion at the Champaign Public Library. Joining us in the studio today, Kyle and Phyllis Robeson and their son, Eric. They're here with us this morning. The family, together with Cal Acosta, has written a book that tells the Robesons' story. The title, Remembering Robeson's, Champaign's Department Store. The publisher is Sagamore Publishing. Listeners, I hope you'll join us this morning. Join the discussion with a phone call or by email. We look forward to hearing your questions and comments. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. The toll-free number, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL, and the email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. Phyllis, Kyle, Eric, thank you so much for coming in and being on the program today.
Nice to be here.
So the question that I have for all of you is this. What do you remember? What is your first memory of stepping into the store? Because it was an institution, and who wants to start? Phyllis.
I will start because this is one of my favorite stories. When I first moved to Champaign, I came here to teach fourth grade in the Unit 4 school system, and at that time they had a business education day, which was held every year, and the teachers would visit a business, spend the morning, and just learn how the business operated. Everyone ate lunch together. Sometimes you went back in the afternoon, sometimes you didn't. So my very first one was Robeson's Department Store, never believing I would be here today as part of the family.
So when did the two of you meet? Before we go, I'm going to go back to that earlier question, but...
Well, let's see, it was 56, I think. Kyle had been away, both in New York and Detroit, training to be in the department store business, and he'd only been back a while. And I was in the store, and his father, if everybody remembers how he went around and talked to everybody, and he came up to see if I was finding things, and I was. Pretty soon he's back, and he said, "Do you know my son? He's tall, too." Well, that's one time being tall was really nice. That's how we met.
Yeah. Okay, now let's go to Kyle. When you were a very wee child, what do you remember first about stepping into that store?
I was very, very young, and I got a job, and it was sacking... beans, you know, and they came in a big barrel, and we had a balance scale, and I got to put them in cellophane bags and tie them up, and I was really, really young. That was it. It was in the lower level of the store. At that time, we had a grocery store there.
Very interesting. And Eric?
Wow, I don't have an exact memory of any particular department or anything like that, but the store as a whole, it was a great place as a little kid. This would have been in the early 1970s to run around in. So my sister Kim and I would just kind of, I don't think we left any corner of the store uncovered whenever we went into the building. So we covered all floors, the lower level, the luncheonette, the Skyway, all of it. And I don't remember the first time that I walked in. It was just kind of something that was always there. But we always, I think what every time we came, we visited everybody in every department.
Yeah. Well, what was your favorite department?
Oh, wow, what was my favorite? Well, we hit the toys a lot downstairs. being that age was, that was one that we never missed. I think it was probably between the toys and the luncheonette because, you have to take a little break and get a snack and then go back down to the toy department. So I would say, between the two of those, yeah. Pretty confident.
As a young woman, Phyllis, what was your favorite part of the store?
Well, I probably like the cosmetics. I don't remember. I remember the first time when I met Kyle's dad and he wanted to know if I knew Kyle. I was looking for plastic rain boots. I remember that. But I don't know. In later years when we had Roby 2, that was my really favorite.
Oh, Roby 2 was wonderful.
Yeah.
Kyle, when your father introduced you to Phyllis, what were your thoughts?
Well, I don't know. She was in, as she said, buying these boots, and he got her telephone number, and about 2 weeks later I gave her a ring. And she said, I must have been bored that weekend.
Yeah, a ring being a phone call.
Very good point. And when was it clear that you two had something going?
Well, it depends on which one of us you ask that. It was off and on 6 years later that we were married, so it took a little while to get it all figured out.
So that was the 1960s,
1963?
63.
Well,
excuse me.
Go ahead.
My dad had a lot to do with that, my dad and my mother, and they one morning they got up and said, by the way, you're not going to see Phyllis tonight. You're going to get married. You're going to have to get married. And we want it that way, and you won't see her if you don't get married. And I said, well, I'll see her.
Wow.
So there's an ultimatum in the family.
Your dad was a guy who knew what he wanted.
Yeah, right? Well, it's the old colonel. You know how they are.
Yeah. Well, let's go back in history to the first store, the dry goods store that your grandfather, F.K., opened in 1874. It was, as noted in the book, the first real department store in Champaign, Illinois. What was that store like? Eric, you helped with the research on this.
Well, a lot of the research done was done by George Sheets, and George was he was with the Champaign Public Library also, and Cala Costa had done that. And until a lot of that research was done, I'd seen pictures and I of course heard stories, but didn't know a whole lot about it. And this the dry goods store, I mean, it started out as the farmer store is what it was called, and serving the agricultural community. And F.K. Robeson Sr. was just a very communicative guy in the farming community. It was one of those situations where if there was a bad harvest one year, he would just write down what people had bought and still give them the goods. And then if they had a good harvest the next year, they would come in pay for it at that time. It was just a different society at that point. It was mostly the dry goods for people that worked here on the farms and so forth. And as things progressed, it got more and more this idea of the department store that carried absolutely everything. And the store moved into bigger and bigger facilities throughout the years. The story was very ambitious on his part. It was wonderful to read the story and just see how it progressed through the years.
Yeah, he had worked in Logansport, Indiana, then Danville and Decatur. Why did he put roots down in Champaign?
Good question. I have no idea. He had $800 and he came to Champaign and worked it out. He got a place and started here because I would judge because of the railroad and the university.
And then your father came along and he stayed put. And if I'm recalling correctly, in the book, you went away to train in New York and Detroit, and you were really happy to come back to Champaign.
Oh, yeah. Well, I started out, I went to Miami University down in Oxford, Ohio. And from there, went up to Detroit and worked about 15 months there for J.L. Hudson Company in their executive training program. And when I got out of there, my dad said I was still wet back of the ears, so I went to New York and worked at the garment district in the bowels of New York, and that was interesting. I didn't know German, I didn't know Yiddish, and I didn't know Spanish or Puerto Rican, and I didn't understand Eastern people, so it was quite a revelation for me being out there. I stayed about 5 months, and that's how long I lasted. I had to get back to the good old Midwest.
This is Focus. Good morning. I'm Celeste Quinn. Listeners, I invite your questions and comments this morning for our guests, the Robesons, Kyle and Phyllis and their son, Eric. They are the authors together with Cal Acosta. And Kim played a role, too, your sister?
Oh, sure did.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, in remembering Robesons, Champaign's department store. Listeners, you can join us with a phone call or by email. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. The email address, will-talk@illinois.edu. Let's take a call from a listener now. On a cell phone in Champaign. Good morning.
Yeah, hi. Good morning, Celeste, and good morning to your panel. Enjoying the conversation this morning. I'm of a certain age. I grew up in Chicago, and I'm of a certain age where I can still remember going to the big department stores, my mother actually wearing gloves, and it was a big deal. It was very special, you know. But my dad actually raised us a family of four kids working for Sears for 45 years. I can't imagine having anybody being able to raise a family now working retail. But the reason I was calling in is with your panel there, I'd be very interested in their perspective as to the demise of the family-run department store, if they had any thoughts as to, you know, the reason, the rationale behind it. And also, too, going back to 1990, I was wondering if the family, you know, at some point, maybe the mid-80s, realized that the store would have to close, and how did that decision come to pass? And I'll go ahead and listen off air. Thanks.
Thanks for the call.
It was interesting. With the advent of Lincoln Square, you saw that. When I was in Detroit working, we had Northland, and that was a big operation out in the suburbs, and that was one of the first. Well, first one was in Boston, and I think we were the second for a real big operation. From there, the Lincoln Square, and then we had. Marketplace up on North Neal, and then about that time we got the message, and what I started doing was I knew I was going to close it, and I wanted to line up some other businesses. I was still young, and I wanted to line up some other businesses to go into, and we got into land development. We did about 350 acres in Southwest Champaign. We did the Meadows and Robeson Crossing, etc. And then from there, when at the same time when we closed, Chute Air Force Base closed, and that put a lot of acreage on the market. And I got partners with the Wrestlers and the two brothers, and we bought 135 acres up there. So we've been busy. I mean, we used our talents from what we learned in department store business, and then we moved into these other businesses.
I think part of the demise, too, when the malls were being built away from downtown and Sears and Penney's moved out of downtown, right. Different stores were moving away, and people's shopping habits were becoming different, and they were wanting different things, and it just, the services we provided were appreciated, but they wanted different things besides that, too, and so I think that had a lot to do with it. As far as deciding to close, I remember when we went into the meeting where this decision was made, no one really knew when we went in that that was what we were going to decide. And I think just we could see what was happening, and we wanted to do something before it just was pretty evident that things weren't going well. So we wanted to close on a positive note and still be leave a nice memory.
Yeah. Something that I was struck by in the book, everyone who wanted a job left with one. How did you make that happen?
Alan Newdow, our president, worked very hard on that. We made sure that people when they left us had a source of income. They worked for the university. They went for Carl Hospital and Clinic and different places in town, and went back to school. Some of them retired, and we wanted to leave with a good taste in everybody's mouth.
Yeah. It also seems that it was very important to you. Part of the success of Robson's for so long was its staff. What were everybody from management on down, and they were paid well, and they were hardworking people, and so they were able to make that transition.
Right. Mm-hmm. I ran into someone. Well, it's just been a month or two ago, who used to work for us, and there is still a group that worked there and got to know each other that still meet regularly for coffee or for lunch or something. And I know at first there were several of those groups. I don't know if the others still do or not, but I know that one does.
Yeah. Let's take another call. This is a listener in Champaign on line one. Hi.
Hi. I have a story on Kyle's father, which he may not know. I'm a 50-year member of the League of Women Voters of Champaign County, and the Robesons have always been very good to the League. And when Mr. Frank, as we called him, was the head of the store, he set aside an acre of corn, and whatever that acre brought was what the League got that year as its gift. And it was usually in the order of $500, and that was real, real money, as you can imagine. The president and the treasurer always had to get dressed up in high heels and white gloves and hats and go down and see Mr. Robeson and tell him what the League was doing and what we were planning to do for the next year, and then he gave us the check. And it was just wonderful.
That's a great story, which none of us had heard, I don't
never
think.
Heard that one.
Yeah, yeah, we're hearing some really nice stories.
It's Louise Allen. And,
hi, Louise.
I go back a long way, and you all continue to be very good to the League, and we continue to be very grateful.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for the call this morning, Louise. It's good to hear your voice. Good to hear from you. This is Focus. We're talking this morning with the Robeson family about the department store and about their role in the community and of Champaign-Urbana. My name is Celeste Quinn. This is Focus. You can join us with a phone call or by email, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Toll-free 800-222-9455. The email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. We've got a nice little moment here. Perhaps we can bring in our general manager, Mark Leonard, who is in the studio with us this morning, because one of the things that we're doing today here on the program, in addition to talking with Kyle, Phyllis, and Eric, is trying to raise some money for this public radio station.
Well, we are. I hate to interrupt because the flow of questions and comments is has me on the edge of my seat. I'm sure our audience also. The whole institution of the local family-owned businesses, many communities had that. And although I didn't grow up in Champaign, you know, I was thinking back to the time that I spent in Rochester, New York, and we had the McCurdy's stores and the Sibley's stores, and throughout the 90s, they went by the wayside. And growing up in Albany, I think we had a Whitney's department store. And you don't know what you've lost till it's gone. I think there's a song that has those lyrics, and it couldn't apply any more accurately than the fate of the local department store. It was a very, very unique proposition, and when the malls came along, we all changed our patterns, but we lost something very unique as the chains came in, and they looked alike, and they all had the same merchandise, and you lost the personality and the tradition of the downtown stores. The reason I mention that is that with public radio, what we want to do is to remind you to not take for granted the service that you rely on. It's there every day, which is great, but the reason it's here every day is because we have 13,000 members who currently support the service, and every pledge drive is our opportunity to gently remind you that, first of all, if you are a member, thank you very much for your continued support, and if you're not a member, don't take the service for granted, because without the membership support, none of this would be possible. We are lucky in our community that we have a tradition of strong support for WILL, which is what allows us to have two radio stations, one focusing on news and information and the other focusing on classical music, and also that we're able to produce programs like Focus that are quite a commitment, quite an undertaking. Not every community has anything approaching the amount of local programming that WILL is able to produce. So, gentle reminder, and we'll get back to the conversation, but if you value the added service that you get with this local identity, then just like the department stores, you need to shop here and you need to support it, because it is not a guarantee that it will go forward unless you participate in it. So 244-9455 is the number to call to become a member, or you can go online and make your pledge at willpledge.org.
Thanks, Mark. And I wanted to ask about Robeson, the department store, in that it remained so vibrant and so strong for so long. 1990 was when the doors closed. How did you weather the 1970s?
Oh, you're looking at me. I bought a lot of ice cream down at the down at the luncheonette. tried to do the toy department some business as well. But
I get a kick out of this. We haven't been told what the questions were going to be, so that's why we had a little hesitation there. It's interesting. The 70s. You know, there's quite an evolution going on in this country as the taste levels and things. And we spend a lot of time in New York with our buying office trying to keep current. And we were out in the L.A. market and worked that market for a while. What we found out was that trends and in clothing and came in from each coast, and the Midwest was the last to get it. Of course, that's all changed now, but back in the old days, there was a lag time there. So we spent a lot of time in New York in the garment district. We're with McGreevy Wearing and Howe, and they had a very good interface between the manufacturers and the department stores, and they knew our price lines. They knew our customers. They knew exactly what fitted our customers. So we kept right with the fashions. That's what got us through the 70s.
Plus, yeah. We kept updating the store and changing departments and modernizing areas.
Yeah, it was very interesting. There's so many wonderful photographs in the book, and it's really interesting and very fun to go through and see how displays changed, the layout of the store changed, and that kind of thing. You have to keep it, fresh.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. Kyle, in the book, I think this is something you said probably in response to a reporter's question when downtown Champaign was seeing some really rough days. You said, "Downtown's not a hopeless situation. It's just going to change its complexion."
Right.
What did you see at the time in terms of the future for downtown Champaign?
Well, what has happened, you know, it's like evolution, you know. It had a real bell curve on it. And when it hit down the bottom, what happened, it happened in all cities across the United States. What came in were small shops that took up the slacks and bars and nightlife and et cetera like that. And we have seen that in Champaign, all the bars and the live music and that's sort of what was the fill. Mm-hmm. And the retail obviously moved out where you could have a large parking lots and free parking big huge stores that are box stores that are 100,000 square feet stores. It's a whole different program. Yeah. But that's what happened. Sort of a fill-in with bars and specialty shops and things of that nature that happened across the country.
When the downtown mall was put in, it went in 1973, did it help or did it add to downtown's troubles?
Well, you can always look back to see what we should have done. A gentleman, Dr. Glenn Winch, and I argued on this thing with the city quite a bit. We plugged up the main artery, which was Neal Street, and then we wanted to bypass around it to work something out on Walnut and try to add an opening. We had a two-way couplet over on the west side, Randolph and State, but we didn't have that same thing over on the east side. And we got it plugged up, and of course this really affected the downtown, and it actually slowed up everything, and we started getting the wrong kind of people downtown.
Yeah, this was something that a lot of cities did back in the 70s to try and do something.
Try to do something.
Yeah. We went up in Minnesota and. Brett Taylor and Mankato did the same thing, and I looked it over and I tried to bring back what Brett had done, and they had a couplet around theirs, and it didn't restrict the traffic, and we had a real restriction here, and that's where the problem came in.
Yeah, well, I look at downtown Champaign and downtown Urbana today, and I think, all things considered, they're doing very nicely. There are places that you want to go to, and actually I like trading with those people who are in businesses in our downtowns because they know who I am when I come in the door. They know I'm a customer. Some of them know my name. It's wonderful. I wonder, I'm looking down here to Eric, because we're close in age. Well, I'm quite a bit older, but what do you see? What do you see? And you've been, you were a little kid
right,
in the 70s.
Right. Well, yeah, we did see that, of course, when the store was there, and there were a number of stores in downtown Champaign. There was one feeling, and this was back in the late 70s, 80s, and so forth. When the store closed down, it really went through a little bit of a dip in downtown Champaign. But now in looking in some of the efforts that have been taken to redevelop the buildings that are there, the incentives that the city of Champaign has given, you're starting to get that. You're starting to get, you have the entertainment options moving in, the restaurants, people like to be and live around that type of those businesses where it's more of a pedestrian type situation, and like you said, you could go somewhere now, just park somewhere in the vicinity of downtown Champaign, and kind of make the rounds on foot, and it's a very nice atmosphere, and we're seeing that resurgence downtown. I think it's just going to keep getting better and better.
Were you surprised when people began to be interested in housing in downtown?
Not really. It was since all of these things were moving downtown, a lot of the night spots and so forth, and there's a group of people that, we have all of these second-story loft-type apartment spaces down there, and it was just kind of a cool place to be, a cool place to move into, and with a lot of demand. And so it was great, to see that redevelopment and then the new developments that have gone in. And hopefully we'll just continue to see more and more people follow that trend and repopulate the downtown. Then you might see a store, like we had at one point, move in because that it makes sense to serve the population that's living right there.
Yeah. Well, one of the things about downtown Urbana that I like is I can go down and I can have a bite to eat. I can buy some shoes. I can shop a women's clothing store. I can bring home a bundle of flowers. I can pick up a nice loaf of bread for dinner, and then I might go over to downtown Champaign and spend an evening at the theater, at the art, have a movie, you know, go out and with friends and have a glass of wine. You know, there's so much there, and I'm wondering too. What do you think of all the redevelopment that has gone on along the Boneyard in the heart of the city of Champaign? That's got to also be.
I love that.
Yeah. That's also got to be really exciting.
I think there's some very, very exciting things that are going to be happening and are currently happening and they're going to be happening into the future with the development of the Boneyard. It provides us. Of course, we don't have the mountains and the beaches and everything here, but what we do have is this natural amenity that is the Boneyard Creek, and what is happening right before our eyes is we're developing an urban greenbelt where people will be able to walk through from Urbana to Campustown to Champaign. Along the way, you see the stores and the different attractions opening up. I think we're going to have music and art and different things along the way to just encourage this pedestrian friendly area. And I think it's really developing to be a beautiful area. And both cities and what the Campustown has done is just really enhancing this area that is the Boneyard Creek. Yeah. So I'm very excited about that.
For listeners who are outside the immediate area and don't know maybe what we're talking about, the Boneyard used to be treated generally as like a drainage ditch.
Right.
And the flooding problem was horrible, especially in Campustown, the heart of the campus. And now it's such a different story.
I drive down Springfield often because I do a lot of volunteer work at Provena. And I went past this area where they were working so very long on this Boneyard thing. And I had no idea that it was going to turn out to be such a lovely area.
Yeah.
Be very, very appreciated, I think.
This is Focus, and we're talking this morning with some members of the Robeson family. We're talking with Eric, Kyle, and Phyllis, and we're remembering Robesons this morning. There is a book out that does the same thing. The title, Remembering Robesons, Champaign's Department Store. The Robeson family and Cal Acosta put this book together. Lovely book, coffee table size. And they're wonderful pictures and great stories. So if you remember the store or you remember the day when there were grand family-run downtown department stores, I think whether or not you're from Champaign or ever shopped at Robeson's, you'll enjoy this book. Let's take another call. This is a listener in Champaign County on line one. Good morning.
Hi. Yeah, I'm hoping that many people in Champaign divert their water and do the rain barrel thing like in Urbana so that maybe that can be less of a detention pond during the big storms and more of a park most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not what I wanted to ask about downtown, basically. A fellow I knew a long time ago, and I've kind of lost the memory of it, can't confirm it with him. He was a usher in one of the movie houses, and he talked about these subterranean, when the area was district heated, tunnels. And I've also heard that when downtown was sort of a heyday of entertainment in the past, all of the burlesque and art theaters and stuff were connected, and that maybe in winter time and other times when performers would hop from one to the other without having to go above ground. So I also said there was like huge numbers of all these historic posters that were down in these tunnels as well. I don't know if anybody ever collected them before the mildew hit, but so I don't know if you know about that. You're talking about the green space and the entertainment district also makes me think of this idea that the big gap from the fire just down from Ropes
and, yes.
could be a band shell park kind of thing, and and incorporate the entertainment aspect of these downtown festivals and things like that without having to maybe block off the streets as much as they do now, which not that I'm opposed to blocking off the streets, but it just it would be nice to have a that kind of amenity in downtown. So thanks for letting me go on that. Good luck with the drive, and I guess the main thing is whether you know about this subterranean story.
Well, thank you. I don't. You'll have to defer to Kyle or Eric.
I missed that one.
I've heard rumors. I think probably like he has, but I don't know any specifics on that. I do know that you would be able to get down in the block where the ultimate destination or site of Robeson's department store was there on Church and Randolph. You would be able to get down below there and into the Russell Building, which is where the Rialto Theater was, and you could kind of work your way through cellars there and move from one building to the other, I believe. But I don't know as far as if it would cross under streets and that type of thing. But I've heard the same rumors, and they're kind of intriguing as to all of this is connected.
Yeah. And what I've heard, too, is that the bones, the skeleton of the Rialto is still there. Is that right?
That's true, yeah.
Yes.
It's behind the Russell Building, kind of. Oh, there's a bank there now right on along Church Street, and there are some small retail stores in front of it. But
right.
Back behind there, the bones of the Rialto still exist with the the open space. And there was actually just a film shot in that space recently, and it provided a good space for that. It'd be great to get that up and vibrant again.
Oh. Yeah. Let's take another call. This is a listener in Champaign on line 2. Hello, you're on Focus.
Oh, good morning.
Hi.
I'm just calling to say.
Hi, Lou.
I know that voice anymore.
It's Lulier. I know it.
Now, don't give me my identity away. I want to remain anonymous. Well, this is all triggered because of the wonderful book that Kyle Fellows, Kim, and Eric have put together, and it's brought back a lot of memories of Champaign, and really and truly, it'll be a treasure for. Years to come as a research item of what happened in Champaign-Urbana. And it just, if you haven't read it, I'm going to recommend that you acquire it someplace because it's really, it's a, what do you call it, a book that you put
on your table and pick
up and read from time to time.
Yeah.
It's good.
Thanks, Lou.
Well, it's okay. I think so many people have memories of when Phyllis did the commercials on the air. Everybody looked forward to she became a media darling. You've never heard that, have you, Phyllis? But everybody enjoyed what Robeson's brought to the community and all the wonderful things that all of them have done over the years for our community. And what you're just talking about is very exciting, and I've heard bits and pieces of it and what can happen downtown in the future, and I know Eric you're on top of that.
Trying to be. It is exciting, and we just looking forward to just the continued progress with that.
Well,
for sure.
with you running it, it'll happen. I can tell you that.
Thanks, Lou.
Well, enjoying the show and keep the calls coming in. It's really it's fun.
Thank you.
Thanks, Lou.
Thanks for the call. You want to tell us a little bit about your friend?
Oh,
Lou, and I think that his wife stood up with you at your wedding.
Yes, she did. When Kyle and I were dating, and Mary, who is now Mary Lee, was dating a friend of Kyle's, we knew each other just, like you see at parties and stuff, but... Kyle and Leonard knew that we wanted to both go to Europe, so they arranged that Mary and I travel to Europe together and spent the summer, had a wonderful, wonderful time. Can't believe I did it. And when we came back, we were at a party somewhere, and Lou came up to me and said, I want to meet Mary. And so they did, and they now have twin daughters that are just the age of our Kim, and they've just grown up like triplets, and Eric's big brother to all of them.
Yeah. So, well, tell us about the commercials.
Oh, well, we were in Colorado one summer, and I got a phone call, and the person that was working with the advertising people had suggested having a family member do commercials. And at that time, you didn't hear that so much. And so they called to see if I would do that, which I'd never done, and I thought that was really a crazy suggestion. But we started doing them, and I would go, and every week I would tape maybe three or four commercials, and we played new ones all the time, and it was during drive time to work, so people were hearing it. And I did that for 7 years, and I got so I really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun.
I want to thank the listener for calling in and invite others to join us this morning here on Focus. My name is Celeste Quinn. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Toll-free 800-222-9455. And the email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. I think, Kyle, maybe did you want to say something about the commercials, about the advertisements?
Well, it was interesting. We had Bill Kovar for years that took care of our advertising, and then ultimately Linda Zygmunt came in, and she sort of handled Phyllis on this thing. And they used to write up they go down there and write it up and everything. And it is interesting. And at the end there, Phyllis didn't have to have all the write up; she could sort of ad lib it.
Shopping with Phyllis is what it was called.
Yeah,
that's
really
what the spots were called.
Yeah. What do you remember about them? Because I don't remember hearing them.
Yeah, I remember hearing them a lot. I think they actually ran daily during the morning drive time, and it started out with this is Shopping with Phyllis. They were, I don't know if they were kind of donuts or not with but it would start out a certain way, and then we would, whatever the specials were, whatever was going on that day or particular events that were coming up at the store, she would cover that. And they were daily audio. They were on every day at our house. I remember that.
So. Eric, you have a great voice. Have you ever done broadcast work?
Every once in a while, I try. I go in and do some MC stuff and some broadcast work. It's kind of fun, but nothing official.
Let's take another call. This is a listener in Champaign on line one. Hello there.
Hi. Good morning. Well, Phyllis, I was one of the people at DWS that was there when you used to come in and do those commercials. I grew up here. I think the first time, I am really a townie from tiny little on, and I think the first time I went and got real makeup and got real help was the makeup counter at Rosen's. Anybody who grew up here was part of your cultural growing up to go to Robeson. and even before my time, and I'm getting up there now, I know there was dancing on the roof at Robeson's. That was before you and I were able to do that, Kyle.
Yeah. Right, that's for sure.
Yeah, but gee whiz, I still miss the big thing that all the stores downtown, and particularly Robeson's, provided, which is service. That was really what you got when you went in. You got that extra help. You got the extra help with fitting. You got help with choices you were making. It's a kind of death of something that I think is really, really too bad. But I have fond memories of going downtown and shopping and going to Lewis's and Willis's and Fields, and oh my, there were tons of stores downtown. I think actually for people my age, we now have a dearth. There isn't a whole heck of a lot here in terms of dressing and that sort of thing that we had when I was growing up. I don't know if you think that, Phyllis, but
well,
I sure do.
It is different, I will agree.
But anyway, lovely, lovely memories, and it was certainly a part of my growing up, that's for sure.
Well, thank you.
Nice to hear your voice again, and I'll see you at Krannert.
Okay.
Thanks for the call. Lots of wonderful memories. That reminds me of going downtown
I grew up in Rockford, and I have an aunt who worked for many, many years at Marshall Fields in Chicago, and it was such a big deal. And it was some of the, I don't know, passages, rituals in your life began at the department store, whether it was a touch of lipstick or nylon stockings or your first pumps. You know, that was a big deal.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. She mentioned the dancing on the roof, which I thought we might hear more about. Of course, I wasn't here at that time, but it was interesting when Kyle and I were first dating. I went home to visit my parents, and we had some very good friends we were with, and I'd mentioned I was dating Kyle, and the man said, "Oh, I used to dance on the roof." And I never heard that before, and I looked at him. I didn't. I wasn't at all sure what he was talking about. Didn't even know he'd gone to school here. So that was my first knowledge of the dancing on the roof, which was a very, very popular thing, evidently.
When did that happen? When did it end?
Back in the 30s. Back in the 1930s, yeah. And there was a whole circuit of the big bands that would go around the Midwest, travel from town to town, and rooftop dances were the craze. And so in Champaign, Ropes and Roof was where they would be booked, and we would book them up there during that time during Prohibition as well, so there wasn't any liquor sales or anything like that. But we had some big names from the big band era that played up there. Dick Cisney was a local artist and had an orchestra, and he played up there often. And it was just very interesting when I'm putting the book together. A number of people, Cal Acosta was able to interview that were actually there, and just had great interviews in the book about their experiences. Unfortunately, it's not, you know, today you're used to seeing, you know, like Facebook and MySpace and everybody taking pictures everywhere they go. There's just very, very few pictures that are available of it. And actually, we just pulled one. We were able to find one that a newspaper took years and years ago. And that's in the book, but most of it is just great stories that are being retold, and a lot of old advertisements for the big bands that were available for the newspapers at the time, and it was the craze, and
yeah.
A lot of great comments about that in the book.
What was downtown Champaign like during the years of the Second World War, and after the war, when so many GIs came to school at the University of Illinois?
You know, I don't even remember.
I remember during the there's quite a bit in the book about when Kyle's father Roby went into the military at age 42. And actually he was during the war, he was gone for that during Kyle's childhood. I don't know if that's something that during that time, because you were still very young at that point.
Right. We stayed at home during the war. A lot of people went with their families and moved from camp to camp or post to post. But we were here in Champaign. So I had my mother raise me through my high school career, which is very interesting. And I went to Uni High over here, right across the street, and then went over to Miami. But, I can't remember too much about it. It was tough times. Everybody was on. We had stamps to get food, gasoline, and everybody had cut back. And we had a victory garden across the street. And, it was rough for a lot of people because the families were all broken up. And everybody was very, very uptight about the family and the war and everything else.
Yeah. I wonder, Phyllis, this is a question for you. Through the good times and the bad times, you know, things were rough here and there, but then things were wonderful and the store continued to thrive. But there had to have been a lot of pressure on Kyle and the other people, the managers, Alan Nudo, Kyle mentioned earlier, and I want also
Dave,
Kyle
Dave Webb.
Talk
Dave
about
Webb.
David
Dave
Webb.
Webb.
Mm-hmm. Who? Tell us about David Webb.
My dad, we talked it over, and we needed a general manager with a background in retailing, and I hadn't had that much knowledge in it, and. We interviewed Dave Webb Dave was an Oklahoma gentleman, and he'd worked in he'd been with about three different locations in different stores. He started out in the shoe business and worked his way on up. And Dave was quite a guy. He got to be a retailer of the year with IRMA, Illinois Retail Merchant Association. So Dave gave us a lot of incentive. We had classes every week. We had a buyer's manual from National Retail Merchant Association book, and we'd take a chapter a week, and we did that in our pink room. And
The pink room.
Yes. I remember somebody talking about that, saying, I don't know why it was painted pink or called the pink room, but that's what it was.
Well, it's funny because now thinking about makeup, I remember going to, I can't remember the firm, I don't know if it was Revlon or what it was, but they did a workshop, and we were in the pink room, and it was great.
Room.
And I think we had lunch. And
probably.
Yeah.
I used to love to go with our buyer, Thelma Schaefer, when we went to New York to the cosmetics market, because it's very different than the other markets, very much more glamorous.
And then years later, I worked my first job out of high school. I worked for a department store, and eventually I went to work as kind of a troubleshooter for buyers. And one of the people that I worked for was the cosmetics buyer, and that was great fun.
Oh, yes.
Lots of free samples.
Right.
But I wanted to ask Phyllis, we're going to have to wrap up here, but you know, raising the family, being a school teacher, being the wife of a man who's, this is a hard business.
Yes.
Even when times are good. How did you, as wife, mom, working woman, how did you manage it?
Well, I wasn't teaching. I quit teaching when we got married.
Okay.
I taught 9 years. Kyle wanted me to teach one more. And I said all that would prove was I could say I taught 10 years instead of 9 years. So it was a busy, busy time. Lots going on, long hours. I did a lot of volunteer work at that time as well. But we seemed to have a happy time and get it done.
They're beautiful children, Eric and Kim, and now grandkids.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Right? So
yes.
The family continues to grow.
Yeah.
Well, we're out of time. It's just been such a pleasure to have the three of you here this
Thanks
morning.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Oh, my pleasure. Our guests this morning in this portion of Focus have been Eric, Kyle, and Phyllis Robson. Thank you so much. And do look for this book, Remembering Robson's Champagne's Department Store, Calacosta with the Robson Family, and the publisher is Sagamore.